What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Milwaukee Sports Performance Podcast. My name is Michael Falk, and I will be hosting today's episode. We have no guest today. I'm just going to be talking about a topic that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is the topic of speed. I think speed in team sports and individual sports is a differentiator in performance. You can pick your favorite sport, whether it be baseball, and talking about exit velocity for hitters, pitching velocity for throwers, whether it be some type of field-based sport. Linear speed is almost always going to be critical. Multi-directional speed, or the ability to change directions, is going to be a differentiator. Or you could go to a sport like golf that is going to club head speed right now is directly correlated to performance and money earned on the PGA Tour, where the longest hitters in the world make the most money. So speed is critically important, and I think that developing it is often misunderstood, and people don't understand what goes into actually getting faster. So I wanted to dive into that a little bit and share some of my personal experiences with that and things that we've noticed recently in talking to players, families, coaches, things like that. The first thing that I want to tackle is some of the misconceptions about running speed, because I hear a lot of players that'll say like, oh, I want to get faster, I need to go run sprints. Okay. And they are probably correct. To get faster, you do need to go and run and run fast. But what we see most people think of with improving running speed and sprinting is actually more like repeat sprintability or conditioning. Okay. While repeat sprintability or some type of conditioning workout based around sprints is potentially important for sports performance to be able to repeat high-speed running efforts over time, it is not a good way to actually get faster or improve your maximal speed. In order to improve your maximal speed, you need to actually run at maximal speed, and you cannot do that in repeated efforts when you are fatigued or tired. So to really work on maximal sprintability or your top-end speed, you need to have full rest in between efforts, okay? The most common ways for athletes to work on sprinting speed is going to be something that's called a flying start. And this is going to be on a field where typically you're going to have a 10-yard area to build up, sometimes even longer than 10 yards to kind of slowly build up. You're then going to have 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, typically some distance that you're going to try to maintain or your top speed and hit that top speed. And then you're going to have another 10, 15, 20 yards to really be able to slow down gradually from that top end speed. So these are often called flying 10s, flying 20s, and it is designed for athletes to really hit that speed. But you cannot just turn around and run back in the other direction when you get to one end. You need to take often 3, sometimes as much as 5 minutes in between those efforts, because working on true top end speed is maximally fatiguing. Okay. And if you are doing this as a conditioning drill, and how many of these efforts can I get in to the next 15 minutes, you are going to not be working on top end speed. You might be working on, again, repeat sprintability, but you will not actually be working on improving your top-end speed, because you will be fatigued. And if you are fatigued, you will not be able to display that maximal effort and really work on that speed. So just remember that if you want to get faster, you cannot work on getting faster and your conditioning in the same drill. You might be able to do it on different days, things like that, but you can't be doing it in the same drill. So if you're a player and you're standing there saying, I want to get faster this year, I need to go run more quote unquote wind sprints after practice, that's probably not the way to accomplish that goal. It's actually just set aside some dedicated speed sessions. Okay. So that's one myth that we've been talking about with people quite a bit. The second thing that we want to talk about a little bit is training and the effect of training on speed and where that plays a role. So strength training is critically important for speed development, because to be fast, you have to put high amounts of force either into the implement, the baseball, or into a golf club, or in the case of sprinting and change of direction, you have to be able to put high amounts of force into the ground. Okay, so if you do not have good force production capabilities and good rate of force production capabilities, you will struggle and you will hit a threshold at some point to how fast you can move, because you cannot simply, you know, hit the ground hard enough with your foot to run faster, or you know, swing the golf club faster to generate that club head speed, because you just don't have enough muscle force. So improving max strength is going to help you get faster to a point. What we have been seeing, and there's a lot of debates on Twitter and online on where these thresholds are, that there is a point of diminishing returns where athletes will get relatively strong enough for their sport and for their speed level, where it's not that getting stronger won't help them even more, but the returns will diminish. And where that is can vary. You'll hear a lot of people say, throw out specific body weight numbers on, you can squat 1.5 times your body weight, or if you can deadlift 2 times your body weight. You know, I haven't heard a convincing argument on any one particular thing, but there is a point that there's only a finite amount of time to get in the gym, to train, to get stronger, to work on your running mechanics, to go to practice, right? At some point, you have to pick and choose what it is that you work on. And there becomes a point that, you know, getting stronger might not impact your on-field performance as much as working on your explosiveness, working on your power development, or working on, again, just actually going and running faster, or going and throwing the baseball harder, right? So strength is critically important, and many younger athletes in particular are going to get a lot of benefit off of improving their max force capabilities. This is going to allow them to have the muscular force to express that strength at higher velocities of movement. But just know, if you are an older athlete later on in college, you know, as you get into your professional career, as you're really, you know, physically maturing and you know, deadlifting, squatting multiples of your body weight, you just have to start asking yourself, is this particular thing that I'm working on really impacting my on-field performance, or am I just getting better in the weight room? Okay. So just remember that max strength will help you be faster to a point. The next thing that I wanted to cover was that there are more physical qualities to work on in the gym than just max strength. Okay, so I've previously written and talked about the need to lift weights at different speeds and train different physical qualities. And with that comes something that's called intent. And so there can be big benefits in the weight room, especially if you are strong enough, to taking lighter weights and moving them faster or more explosively, to doing more plyometric type activities that are training your tendons or your bones, or other qualities of stiffness and things like that, that can help you actually run, sprint, swing, throw harder and faster. But all of those exercises require intent. And what I mean with intent is your effort to move quickly. Sometimes we see athletes that will go into the gym and they will try to be working on that maximal, like, force production capabilities by moving quicker, but maybe the effort's not all the way there. They feel like they're moving fast and they're trying, you know, pretty hard. But to really get the benefits out of these things, you need to really try to express your strength as quickly as possible with as much intent behind the movement as possible for you to get the most out of it. This is something that we think external feedback can be very helpful for athletes that are training. There's something now called velocity-based training that we can give athletes feedback on how fast are they moving that particular weight. And we can turn this into a little bit of a game, like, okay, you move that weight at 0.9 meters per second last week. Can you move it at 0.95 this week, right? Getting them to compete with themselves and really try to bring that maximal effort to every single rep. Because otherwise, if you're not doing that, you're really just moving light weights at like a not fast enough tempo or speed, where you're probably not lifting enough weight to really get stronger. And if you're not moving quick enough to get faster and more explosive, then you're sort of going through the motions and not getting a lot out of it. So we often talk about kind of staying out of the middle zone, either really lifting weights slow and heavy and working on that, or really trying to be explosive, fast moving, and lighter weights move very quickly to work on rate of force development and power development, and trying to kind of stay out of the like, sort of heavy, sort of moving quick, but not really in either camp. This is something that we see quite a bit. So if you are an athlete and you are in the gym and you're doing something that's working on power, explosion, just make sure you're really, giving that full effort, competing, right? Find a teammate, try to beat them. We have a Kaiser machine in our gym that we can do stuff with the upper body. We'll do explosive rows or explosive chest presses. And I was working with a player the other day, and he's rehabbing from an injury, but my power on a row was higher than his. And I was like, come on, I'm old, I'm slow, you're young and athletic and trying to get back to high level sports. Like, you have to be able to beat me, right? And just getting that competitive environment. Next thing we knew, his power was 500 watts more than mine was, which is what we're looking at to get the most out of that particular training stimulus. So sometimes without that objective feedback, I'm not saying that you're dogging it or trying to, that you're not trying. It can just be hard to know. Maybe you have that extra gear that you don't even realize you can access, and we need to get back to fully committing that, and getting that objective feedback can be really helpful. Speed's a skill, okay? And there's a lot of debate that I hear about this in particularly baseball and golf, where it's like, is ball speed really all that it's about? What about the art of pitching? What about the art of hitting shots on a golf course? And, now the ball just goes so far and it's thrown so fast, and it's taken the art out of the game. And that's maybe a debate for people outside of that, of me and people that are, more experts in those sports. But what does irritate me and frustrate me is when people start talking about, oh, the guys that are throwing, everyone throws 95 to 100 in baseball right now, or everyone on the PGA Tour has ridiculously fast clubhead speed, and it's just not fair. They're changing that. And I think it fundamentally misunderstands how hard it is to actually get faster, to throw a baseball at that effort, because it is a skill. We could take the most explosive basketball player and put a baseball in their hand, and they would not be able to throw 95 miles an hour. We could take, the most skilled football and explosive, strong, powerful football player and put a golf club in his hands, and he's not just going to be able to hit 330-yard drives perfectly straight down a very narrow fairway, okay? So speed is a skill, and there needs to be skill development involved in accomplishing these tasks. There is a time for us to say, you need to just get a ball and learn how to throw faster. There is a time that you need to say, pick up a golf club and learn how to swing it faster, or go run sprints for time and figure out how to make that time go lower. I do think that needs to be a component of training, but leaving it all up to that, to physical development, and just go do the thing faster, takes away and misses that skill development piece. And back to the objective feedback, I think that with skill development, getting external feedback on outcomes immediately is very important. I'm going to use golf as an example because it's something that I'm the most familiar with myself to share what this experience is like. But if you are working on clubhead speed as a golfer without having a swing radar in front of you or a ball speed sensor in front of you to give you feedback on was that swing faster or slower, then you don't really know if what you're doing is working, okay? So the way that the human body learns in motor learning is through testing things, figuring out if it works, and then internalizing that and trying to lock down the feels that do work to accomplish that goal. And more than any coach or external cue or feedback, the thing that is going to teach us the most is failure or success. And we need to set up environments that have immediate and clear feedback for the learner on did what I try or did what I feel work. And so back to golf, having a swing radar in front of you that says your club head speed was 110 miles an hour. And then I'm working with instructor, or I have been told I really want to feel the pressure shift into the ball of my lead foot earlier so that I can push off that leg harder to generate more club head speed. Okay. Last swing is 110 miles an hour. Let me now see if I can feel that pressure shift in that lean foot earlier than it did last time. I take another swing. I try to get that feel and my club head speed goes up to 112 miles an hour. Great. That cue, that feedback, what I tried to do there worked, right? That is something that now I can continue to do and get feedback on. How did that go? But let's say that I wanted to feel a bigger turn into my trail hip. So I'm right-handed. I wanted to feel a bigger coil into my right hip during my backswing because I thought if I got a bigger hip turn, that would result in faster club head speed. So again, my initial swing was 110. I now try to feel this bigger turn into my right hip and the swing is now 107 miles an hour. Okay, well, that cue didn't work. That feeling didn't give me that feedback on that I was looking for, right? So now maybe I try again a couple of times, but if that club head speed stays consistently low, I know that that sensation, that feel, that move that I'm working on is not the way for me to generate more club head speed. Maybe for someone else it would be, but it's not helping me. Without getting that objective feedback, we are grasping at straws and we don't really know what the outcome is. And it doesn't give us a chance to develop the motor skill to move quickly. So you cannot ignore the motor learning component and the skill component of speed development because it is critical in all of these sports. And I don't care if that's sprinting technique. I don't care if that's how you get in and out of your cuts or your breaks as a team sport athlete, your pitching mechanics, your swing mechanics for golfers or baseball players, but the motor learning and the skill aspect cannot be ignored if you really want to achieve peak performance and safety at those high speeds. Okay, so we need to run fast, swing fast, throw fast, and work on just the effort and intent behind that. We need to also work on the motor skill to do those things in the efficient manner. When we talk about efficiency, we are really talking about health and performance combined. We are looking for the highest physical outputs with the lowest possible stress on your body. So in a pitcher, we're looking for the highest possible arm speeds with the lowest possible elbow and shoulder torques, because that's what's going to allow arms to stay healthy for the long run. With golf, it's looking for highest possible club head and ball speeds with the least amount of stress on, say, a low back. Okay, so using efficient mechanics to keep that commonly injured area healthy. With sprinters, we're looking for highest possible peak running speeds with correct mechanics to limit the risk of sustaining hamstring injuries. So those things go hand in hand. And to ignore the skill aspect of getting faster is really missing the boat, in my opinion. The last thing I'll touch on is sort of back to that initial thing that I was discussing, that we can't get faster if we're tired. I think this is the other place that getting objective feedback is going to be critical. So I will again use the example of golf and club head speed. But the other important aspect of getting, you know, unique feedback on every single repetition is it starts letting you detect when you are tired. So I set up and I'm going to do a set of swings and I am averaging that 110 swing speed. Maybe I'm beating it. Maybe I'm going up 11 to 112. And then all of a sudden in swing 8, 9, and 10, I'm in 107, 106, 105, right? I'm getting that feedback that I might not feel tired, but my nervous system, my body is drained and I am now moving slower. If I don't stop and recover, I will just be working on swinging slower. So when I when I'm getting that objective feedback, it lets me identify these trends and stop earlier, take my 3 to 5 minutes rest, come back and reattempt another set of drills at the highest possible movement speeds that I can get to. If I don't get up that objective feedback, if I just keep going, right? I'm just training my nervous system. I'm training my body to move slower. and I will not see those increased speed peaks. So again, that objective feedback on every rep of a session when you are working on getting faster, whether that is getting laser timing gates on sprinting or even a stopwatch, whether it's getting feedback on ball velocity, exit speed velocity for hitters, ball speed or clubhead speed for golf. Again, you name it, but get some type of objective feedback to A, increase that effort level, get the feedback on the skill, but also monitor for earlier signs of fatigue so you can stop, recover, and then get back to work at that true top speed and really work on pushing that number up higher and higher as we go. So why do we need to work on peak speed so much? Because that's what I keep coming back to. In all these sports, we're really thinking about is speed reserve. And, you know, because some people might say like, well, what if I'm not going to swing any faster than that? I can't swing all out at a baseball when I'm trying to time it up to a pitch. And that is correct. Same thing in golf. You're usually not swinging out of your shoes when you actually have to get a ball in play. But what we look at is speed reserve. And the way that we approach this concept is we think about the highest possible movement speeds of a sport movement that we can achieve is our threshold. So let's say that I can swing a golf club as fast as I possibly can at, for, you know, sake of ease of math here, 100 miles an hour is my just max club head speed. That ball is not landing anywhere near a fairway, but it's as fast as I can physically move a golf club. When I am playing a round of golf, I am swinging at 96, 97 miles an hour. So I'm functioning at, you know, 96 to 97% of my absolute peak. Okay. That is still really hard. That might be hard to be consistent with. And it might be very stressful in my body because I'm functioning at that max peak effort. Well, if I could take my club head speed from 100 to 110, even if I don't, you know, actually swing at 110 when I'm playing a round of golf, let's say I even only bump up to swinging the club at 100 miles an hour in a round of golf, that is going to be way less stressful in my body because my peak is that much harder. So now I may be functioning closer to roughly 90% versus 95, 96%. Okay, so it's going to be easier on my body, less risk of injury. It's going to be easier for me to time up and control. And it's going to be more sustainable throughout the entire course of a round. Same thing with a pitcher. We increase the absolute fastest that we can move an arm. And now when you actually have to go face a batter, throw a pitch, you can feel like you're working at a much lower effort level and you will be getting better results, more control, faster ball speeds, less perceived effort, be able to last longer through outings. And you will, because you will be functioning at a lower percentage of that peak speed that you're able to generate. And so that's why it's so important to work on these things. Where should you time it in your week and your day? Again, speed is fatigue sensitive. It is the most fatigue sensitive thing that we have. That means if you are working on speed, it always needs to be earliest, first thing, right after your warm-up in your daily schedule. Okay, so I'll use baseball as an example here, or I'll use golf again as an example. If you're going to go and practice and you're going to hit balls on the range and then you're going to work on your short game and your putting, you need to warm up, do your club head speed drills first, try to swing as fast as you can first. And then if you want to still work on hitting drivers once you're fatigued, you can for precision, for accuracy, to work a different ball shape. You just can't work on your max effort speed once you're fatigued. So it needs to be first before fatigue sets in, then everything else with your day, your workouts, your other skill development stuff, that can all follow it. It won't be as impacted as your fatigue will be. So whether it's sprinting, throwing, hitting, speed work is always first in your day. And then you need to be recovered. Okay. So you need to have some time from your last big effort to, you know, get your body neurally ready again to hit those speeds. So typically you're not going to be able to work on this more than two, maybe three times a week. If you're trying to work on speed any more than that, you are going to be working into fatigue. We're going to see those performances decrease, and you won't be working on getting faster. You'll just be kind of honestly training yourself to be the same speed or even get a little bit slower. So 2 to 3 times a week is really the most that people are going to be able to benefit from some of these speed workouts because of how fatigue sensitive they are. So this is just something that I've been thinking about recently. It is the winter up in Wisconsin. This is when I always work on my club head speed over the winter. It's something that I've really been noticing in my training, something that we've been talking with families a lot about this baseball off season. And then even with our runners, distance runners, things like that, we recently had Jack Hackett on the podcast. He talked about why long distance runners need to work on their speed development to get faster and run faster, even marathon times or half marathon times, and why speed's even important in a distance running sport. So speed has just come up so frequently in my conversations with people around the clinic recently that I just wanted to record a podcast, share some of the thoughts, some of the things that we've been sharing with other families and patients that work with us. And I hope that you guys have found this helpful. So here is to 2024, hopefully being your fastest year yet. And thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you guys on the next episode. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Are you a golfer that wants to try to gain club head speed and prevent injuries? One of the easiest things you can do is do an active warm-up before you start hitting golf balls or playing your round. This has been shown in the research to help improve club head speed as well as reduce your risk of both acute and overuse injuries while playing golf. If you're interested in learning more, we have a free golf active warm-up that you can download if you check out the link in the show notes for this episode. Head over there, download it, and let us know if it helps you hit it farther and feel better while you play.